Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the fourth day of September, Anno Domini 2021. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites as we hurtle headlong into our 33rd year on the air. That's right. Yesterday was our 32nd anniversary.
32 years on the year.
Yep. And now we're starting our 33rd, 32 years in one day. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 10 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And let us remember that it is you folks who keep us on the air. If you people hadn't been calling in for 32 years, we could have stayed home. I mean, we wouldn't be here. So,
well, like I say, I always say this. This last, we've lasted together, the three of us together, longer than my first marriage.
Yeah. So I'm not going to say what that says about one of us, but
it's okay.
So thanks to each and every one of you. And keep calling us, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Google Chrome has well over 2 billion users worldwide, and it not only dominates the web browser market, in Chromium, its Chromium Core runs numerous browser alternatives, all of which makes Chrome the number one target for hackers, and now Google has issued its fifth urgent upgrade warning in 2 months. In a new blog post, Google has revealed 5 new high-rated security threats that have been discovered in Chrome, and the vulnerabilities impact Chrome users on all major operating systems, Windows, Mac OS, and Linux. All 5 are use-after-free flaws. Use-after-free vulnerabilities relate to the incorrect use of dynamic memory during program operation. If the program doesn't clear the pointer to memory after it's freed, hackers can use this error to exploit the program. To protect yourself from these new threats, all Chrome users should go to Settings, Help, About Google Chrome. If your browser version on Linux, Mac OS, or Windows is listed as 93.0.4577.63 or above, that's 0.63 or above, you are safe. If not, the About screen should prompt you to update and restart your browser. You should do this immediately. Google deserves a lot of credit for the speed with which it continues to deliver fixes to attacks on Chrome, but this is only half the solution. The other half relies on the 2.65 billion Chrome users updating and restarting their browsers. Attacks on Chrome continue to grow as its market position strengthens, and it has never been more essential to keep your browser up to date at all times. Go check it right now. And don't forget, Chromium, Edge, Brave, and many other browsers are based on Chromium too. Make sure you update those as well. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Google issues warning for 2 billion Chrome users. Their choices are, I'm safe, I fixed it, I have no idea, going commando, baby, Chrome, and other. So far, we have 23 votes, Chrome, number one, followed close behind by no idea, followed by I'm safe, followed by I fixed it. And of course, if you said other, if you just have more to say about this, head on over to our forums at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y again. Scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is for September 21. Google issues warning for 2 billion Chrome users. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Before we get to the phones, and I know we've got people waiting, please be patient, I do want to reiterate that what I said in the news item itself, the fact that Chrome, that Google has updated so quickly is all to their credit, but they're only a part of the job. The other part is you actually updating your browser. So if you're running Safari, I believe, is also based on Chrome. No, on WebKit. But if you're running Edge or Brave or Opera or any one of 100 other browsers that are based on Chromium.
Pretty much anything but Safari or Firefox.
That's about right. Yeah. That's exactly right. You need to make sure you are updated right now. And it, all you have to do is go to the settings menu, which is the three little vertical buttons in the upper right. Select Help. Select About Google Chrome or About Opera or About whatever or whatever. And if you have a little button that says Update and Restart, then do it. It takes less than a minute all told to do it, and you'll be safer. Why would you not do it?
No, really.
And it can be set. In fact, the default setting is to remember all the tabs you had open.
Right.
I usually turn that off because I'm done with those tabs and I want new tabs.
Right.
But there's some people that leave all the same tabs open again and again, because those are the places I go to all the time.
Yeah, the same here. I've got at least nine tabs open.
I have an argument with one of the guys in the office where I will do Windows based on a topic. And in that topic, I have multiple tabs related to that topic. But when I have a different topic, it's in a different window with its own tabs. And he's a one window, 100 tabs kind of person. So he can never sit at my computer because he can't find anything.
Right. All right, let's, why not? Let's head to the phones. Our first caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. Thanks for your patience, Gary. What's up?
Well, congratulations on your 33rd.
Thank you. Heading into it. Absolutely.
Yes. And just a shout out to everybody that you've got a fun drive coming up, and they better pay up or you guys are heading home.
It's not an impossibility. Thank you.
Okay. I had just three things, and you can cut me off if you need to. Hopefully I won't take too much time. First is just an update about a computer scam. It was new to me and maybe not new to others, but it's a variation on getting a phone call saying, I'm from Microsoft and there's something wrong with your computer.
Yeah.
And the pitch started like this. This is Amazon, and we have a charge for $1,400 on your credit card, and we want to know whether we should send it or not. We just want to verify.
Ooh. So suspected fraud protection. So that sounds like they're doing a good thing.
Right.
Well, here's the deal. You press 1 on the phone, and you get a man with probably a pronounced Indian accent who, first of all, I mean, I've never ordered anything from Amazon, and I have one credit card with a credit limit of $1,000. So, but I bid on it because I wanted to see if someone had opened a credit card in my name, if there indeed was something that they'd ordered. Anyway, he didn't have any real answers even about what the item was, or he wouldn't give me a credit card number. He didn't even know my name. But here's the switcheroo.
Surprise!
Well, here's the switch. He said, do you have a laptop or a desktop? Because there's malware on your computer, and we want to clear it up. And that's when I hung up.
Yep.
But it's just a switcheroo, a slight modification of, I'm from Microsoft, and I'm here to help you.
Right.
Know, that nonsense. But it was new to me, and maybe it isn't new at all, because you've got some very sharp listeners. The question I had is this. I have a Lenovo ThinkPad 365 with Microsoft 20H2, and I do keep it very up to date. I've taken to heart your comments about being your own system administrator, and it runs beautifully. But I get this pop-up from time to time saying, back up your computer. You're not backing up your files. And I go in to settings, find out it's on, and then I check. I do a weekly backup to a Seagate hard drive, because it's an SSD computer, so that's the only backup I've got, and then I switch it off from time to time with another one. But I don't know why I keep getting this pop-up. What am I doing wrong?
Once a week is probably too long for it. It expects you to back up every day.
Well, I could do that. It's just my...
Or you can go into the backup settings and change the
how often frequency.
Change the reminder frequency, too.
All right.
Yeah. Thing of it is, as long as you're double checking it and just not taking it for granted, too many people set up a backup.
Yeah.
And they, figure, okay, it's doing it. And then never check it.
Yeah.
Until the date that they actually need to back up or restore something.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
And then come to find out, it stopped working a couple weeks ago.
Years ago.
The other thing to check is that the error message the reminder that you're getting is coming from the program that you actually use.
Okay.
So, for example, if you have two separate programs that want to do backup, you're using one but not the other, and the other is the one sending you the messages, you should turn that other one off.
All right.
So that makes sense, because Seagate backup drives often come with their own program. So it could be the Windows backup saying you haven't backed up because you're using Seagate. Or if you are using Seagate, then it could be the Windows program the other way around. Yeah.
Yeah, it is coming from a Windows program. I'm actually not sure. I'll check on that. But you've given me some tips. But I do know I'm backing up. So
that's good.
That's the point. And occasionally, it doesn't back up the way I've set it up. It's set up for once a week, and I check the day after, and sometimes it hasn't done it completely for some sort of reason, and then I just do it manually. So if you've got time, I've got a second question, but I know you've got other callers.
We do, I'm afraid, have other callers.
That's all right. You go ahead. Thanks so much, guys, and keep up another 33 years.
Thank you. Do we have other callers? Yes, we do. Okay, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So while Dave is setting up the next caller, we often get asked, how often should I back up? And the answer is, how much do you want to lose?
Right.
If you don't mind losing a day's worth of work, back up every day. If you don't mind losing a week's worth of work, back up once a week.
That's exactly right.
So depending on how much you use the computer, if you use the computer very little, then once a week is probably enough.
Right.
But we have a lot of businesses will back up every hour because they don't want to lose more than an hour's worth of work, if that. And in critical, database infrastructure will have a real-time backup. So every change you make to your database is saved immediately somewhere else just in case.
Right. One of the things I like about pCloud is the instant I save something in my documents folder, for example. I have multiple folders, but in my documents folder, it's immediately backed up. So if I'm working on a document, every time I save it, that gets backed up.
Yep.
Save it again. It's backed up. Save it again. It's backed up. So it's always, there's always a copy on the cloud. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Greg from Fairport, New York. Hi, Greg. What's up?
Hi, folks. You guys helped me immensely about a year ago when my 10-year-old home built got new screens of death. But with your advice, I've been able to keep it running for a year. But I'm replacing it with a big new gaming rig. My question for you, since it's my first new computer in quite a long time, what essential security and utility programs, in addition to antivirus, you recommend I put on it before I load my things like work stuff and browser and email and games?
Well, the first program that you probably should install is Dave?
Revo One Installer.
Yes.
Yep. There you go.
Definitely. I'd even recommend... I've been running it now, I think, for about 3 years. The pro version is not expensive. I think for $30, you can get 2 years coverage. And it's all the free updates, and it does even a deeper job. Just like we've said before, the free program.
Well, maybe we should explain a little bit what Revo Uninstaller does.
Well, that's
first.
What I'm about to get into. The basic version, it goes in there, and it cleans out all the junk that, if you were to use Windows Uninstaller, all it does is turn one bit off. Meanwhile, your registry keeps getting bigger and bigger as you install and uninstall programs. Revo Uninstaller goes in there and looks for all these remnants of where these programs might have put themselves and remove them. And it gives you the options. Now, the pro version will go a little deeper in that. If you say we're using Windows Uninstaller, you know, before, previous, and it left its junk there that you haven't had on your computer in, say, a couple of years, it'll go in there and get rid of that stuff, too, for you. Because it finds that the bit was turned off and figures you don't need it anymore. And it cleans it out so your machine will run a lot smoother and faster.
Right. So you need an Revo Uninstaller. That should be the first thing you install.
Yep.
Because then, particularly with the pro version, it'll watch what you install and keep track of that so it can know what to remove. And what that does is keeps your registry lean and mean. One of the things we hear all the time is, I've had this machine for 2 years and it's real slow booting up now.
Yep.
Used to be fast, now it's real slow. Well, you look at their registry and it's 2 gigabytes. And all of that has to be loaded and dealt with before anything else can happen. Yeah, it's going to slow down your load.
Computers don't get slow unless there's something wrong.
One other thing, though, I want to sort of slide in there is, one, yes, we do recommend, you know, the Revo Uninstaller, the Super Anti-Spyware, and the Malware Bytes. They're the free versions.
Yeah, that was the
They answer. Are all good ones. The reason I suggest, one, paying for the paid versions, these people put a lot of work and effort into it. And if after time you find these programs useful, pay for them. They're not that expensive. Like I say, Revo Uninstaller is only $29 for 2 years of coverage. And that's all free updates also. And so same with these other programs. You can automate a lot of this stuff so you can have it doing it automatically all the time. So look into that, too. Not that the free versions are bad. It's just that you get that much more protection by doing the paid version, and they're not that expensive.
And I've always been a firm believer in, A, paying for good software, and, B, let the computer do the work the computer's best at.
Yep.
You know, why do the computer's work for it?
Yeah. And keep yourself, you know, protected.
But those are the ones. A Revo Uninstaller, a good antivirus program, Malware Bytes, and Super Anti-Spyware. You can find links to those. Pardon?
Do you have a recommendation on antivirus, since I'm starting fresh?
They're all pretty good at this point.
Yeah.
A lot more comes down to your behavior about not clicking links on emails, not believing websites that say you need to install something. One of the biggest things you can do is not run as administrator. Make a standard level user that doesn't have administration privileges that you do all your work in, and then a lot of the bad stuff can't install anyway without popping up and asking for your administration credentials. And if something is asking for that you didn't go out and look for, then it's not good.
That's right. You can find most of these programs, all of these programs, listed on securitytango.com. That's securitytango.com. Click on, across the top, there's a menu. Click on Let's Dance, and the first entry under Let's Dance is the Windows Waltz. And you can see a link to each and every one of these files there. Okie doke.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And good for you. You're starting out doing it right, having all the right programs installed before you get too far along.
Yeah, before you start do anything else, it's sort of like, well, just setting the computer up. That is part of the setup, I consider it. You know, just like you plug in the power for the monitor and, you know, hook up the box and hook up the keyboard and the mouse. Installing those three programs are just part of that procedure. From there on, you know, then go ahead and install your print drivers and everything else. Yes, even the print drivers, folks, because sometimes if you go for updates and all that, and you wander off to another site, you could get some bad junk. So this way you're protected all the way around.
Yep, that's exactly right. So make sure that even if you've got an older machine, that's been around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly install all of these programs. And again, if you get the paid version of Revo One installer, it'll even go back to old things that are in there and clean them up.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe some of the remnants of the stuff that was on this one old desktop that was in there that I thought I had gotten rid of, but oh well.
All right. We're going to take, if you're on the line, please stay on the line. We will get to you when we come back, but we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the 32-year-old Sound Bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we clearly, clearly need to be somewhere else under medication. We are Sound Bites. All right.
And we apologize to all our viewers.
Right, all the viewers who are watching us chair dance.
Yeah.
It's not something anybody should see. Stop. Yep. Stop now. We should probably just go back to the phones. That's
why? We still got... Wait a minute.
Yeah, no.
Oh? Okay. Yeah, all right, we'll go back to the phones.
We can set up a Twitch channel specifically to have people watch us chair dance. That would be a very specialized audience. but instead, we're going to go back to the phones and talk to Ed from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Ed. How are you?
Yeah, how's it going, fellas? I want to ask a question that is kind of confusing me the last couple of days. Normally, on an update, I don't have Wi-Fi here. I have a mobile data on my phone, and it just automatic. It'll just, you click it and just does it, you know.
Are you talking about updating your phone?
No. These are like when you periodically check for updates on your different apps.
Oh, yeah.
And okay. And manage my Play Store, and it's a, you go in and say update all, and you just click it, and then you go about your business, and it does it automatically. It goes
sure.
One to the next and the next. But yesterday I noticed, it's funny to bring about the Chrome, I didn't hear that. In the news, yesterday I had about four updates left. One was like weather, and one was Google, and with all the stuff that's in Google, and it kept trying to update and send me a message: update incomplete, can't find Wi-Fi, which is weird. So it says try again. So I tried again. My mobile data was on, and. You know, it just did that. I tried to, when you said this morning to check on Chrome, and you said it real fast. The number I looked up, it says ends in 455-166. I don't know if that's good or bad. But I tried it with Chrome. It does the same thing. It just spins around and around and around looking for a network connection, which is presumably already there. And I got a corollary question to that also. I don't use the hotspot. I have that on my phone. My understanding is it's kind of related, but if you use your hotspot, that just opens it up to the whole world, and anybody can use the hotspot. Is that correct or no?
It depends. You can open up an open hotspot, but mostly when you go to use a hotspot, it will ask you for a password. So you can set a password, and only people...
Yeah.
Who have that password can connect.
Just like any Wi-Fi.
Right.
Yeah, sharing your Wi-Fi at home. Just like you have a Wi-Fi at home, you can open it up to guests. And unless they have that password, they're not getting in.
Right.
Yeah, that's odd. You see, because all I do is just push on the button and it just comes up automatically. It doesn't ask me for anything.
Well, there is a setup. And in the setup for that, that's where you would put the password.
Okay, gotcha. Now, the other issue, when you said when you talked about that, I immediately went into Chrome to see if there was an update, and for some reason it just won't give it to me. There's four of these things. One's weather, I think. One is Google, and a couple other irrelevant ones.
What phone do you have?
I got an Android J7 Chrome, or J7, I can't think of it. It's a J7 Samsung, sorry.
Samsung, J7.
Yes, J7 Crown. I think the operating system is 8. It's above, you know, it's one of the more, not the most advanced, but I got it a couple of years ago, and it's, fairly, what meets my needs.
Many of the OSs have a rate limiter so that if you're on a cellular connection, it won't download large files because it doesn't want to run up your cell bill. If you have an unlimited data plan or you need to download something bigger, you may have to go into the settings and turn off that rate limit. I'm trying to find out where that would be.
Unlimited. Yeah, no, I don't have a data cap. It's unlimited. Yep.
But the phone may not know that, and so the updater may not load the updates because it thinks you're it doesn't want to risk running out of your data. So we're trying to I'm trying to find in the settings where you put the rate limit.
So do
I think
you?
I had 2 gigs left. I think I did that. I checked the memory yesterday because I was on with Samsung for quite some time, and it turns out that I have a lot of. I didn't know they did this. If you go and ask to find out about something, whatever your phone, your back door, whatever, you'll get a download that you didn't ask for. And the woman says, "Well, you've got." I said, "I can't. I don't know how to." Well, yeah. So we checked it together, and there must have been 30 or 40 downloads that I didn't even know was on there. The company will just, out of the goodness of their heart, give it to you, whether you ask for it or not.
Yeah, they don't care. It's their phone. They don't care. The thing to do is go into your setup and make sure Wi-Fi is turned off.
Right.
Because most systems will prefer Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
So if Wi-Fi is on but there's no Wi-Fi connection, you'll get that error message.
And it will drain the battery faster as it tries to look for Wi-Fi.
Right, because it'll continuously look for Wi-Fi.
Yeah, it keeps, doesn't stop.
Right, so make sure Wi-Fi is turned off. And you should be even able to tell that by looking at the top of your phone and see if there's a Wi-Fi, an empty...
up in the upper left-hand corner, you see just the Wi-Fi.
Wedge.
Yeah.
Right. Pizza wedge.
That should be grayed out.
With maybe a question mark in it. But if that is on, then yes, many programs will try Wi-Fi first and possibly only depending on the other settings in your machine, in your phone.
No, I was thinking about it, maybe going down to the mall where there's a public Wi-Fi because to update this, I like to see what they, like you said, to get the Chrome updated and the Google. Now, this one says if you can't find... the button, or maybe you fellows said it. If you can't find the button, then it's already you've got a system that's already sophisticated enough to have updated already. When you go into it, it tells you how wonderful Chrome is and all about Chrome, blah blah blah. But there's no link there to do what you said.
Right. Like on the phone, it is a little different. It updates through Google Play. What I was talking about was the desktop Linux and Mac OS and Windows. So probably your best bet is to go to some place that has public Wi-Fi and let it update there.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, I was concerned about that. Now, is that the number you read off earlier, Nick, when you first started, that 0.166, you said it real fast. Is that the – am I above that or is that underneath the warning level to
– Well, it's a different Chrome? It's a different set of numbers on the Android version. On the mobile version of Chrome, and that does not seem to have the same problem. At least it hasn't been reported.
I see. Good. Okay. Right. Yeah, give me a little start there because I didn't even hear that on the news, and I'm usually on the phone all the time, and sometimes I'll give you some kind of a message, you know, like it'll ask you remotely, hey, we're going to update the phone, find Wi-Fi, and if you don't do it, it'll just automatically find it and maybe do it through your hotspot or do it through the mobile data, but it'll do it. You know,
right.
Good. Okay. Hey, thanks for the warning.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Interesting that the mobile version wouldn't have the same errors, same issues, because they share a lot of the same code base.
Right. You would think that, but it certainly hasn't been reported that those are issues. Okay, I think I'm going to shut down Twitch and Facebook and Soundbites. This is only a Raspberry Pi 400 and having three separate video streams on top of everything else I'm doing.
Yeah.
Isn't quite working?
Is a little much. It works.
Yeah, but again, as we've said, it's not a powerhouse. Yeah, I mean,
I'm using, with three separate video streams going,
yeah,
you can't. I was using 90% of my processor.
Yeah, and for an 8-gig machine?
4-gig.
Oh, four? Then what do you got?
No, I'm not saying. It's just that it's a little faster when I turn those off.
That is really stretching it to the limits.
All right, our next caller is John from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, John?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Very good. I appreciate you taking the call today.
Thank you.
So here's the story. I have about a 5-year-old laptop, and when it was originally set up and the drives were partitioned, whoever did the original partition did not leave me a heck of a lot of space on the main drive, the C drive. So as time has gone on, you can imagine now I'm showing a red line on the C drive with 4.84 gigabytes free.
Wow.
Yeah, and out of 105. So now I have a data drive that was a terabyte, and I have 904 gigabytes free.
Right.
So what I want to do is, obviously, I want to try to get some of it over, but at the same time, I want to make sure that I'm doing it properly and I'm doing it right. And I understand I can't go in between the two, is what I've heard, because one's a solid state and the other one isn't.
So they're two. It's two different drives. It's not two partitions on one drive.
No, sir. It's two different drives. There's a regular drive and a solid state drive.
Okay.
So, help me.
Yeah. So the first thing to do is what we were talking about earlier. Get a program called Revo Uninstaller.
Okay.
And run that and let it find all of the things in the registry you don't use anymore. And then be careful. Read each thing carefully. Make sure it's something you really don't use anymore. And let it uninstall those programs and clean up the registry. That will help.
Hmm.
Then go into the temp directory, and you may have two of them, one called TEMP and one called TMP.
Okay.
And delete everything it will let you delete. There will be some things where it says you can't delete this. Just say, okay, can't delete it. But delete everything that's in there. That should give you back some room. The next thing to do is to make sure that your data folders, documents, pictures, movies, etc., are all over on your D drive, not on your C drive.
Yeah, the Windows and programs generally have to go on the C drive, which you probably want to be the SSD for speed. But your data can go on the D drive, the spinning drive, because it's bigger.
And the way you do that is you take a look at every program you run and look in the preferences, and somewhere it will tell you where the default data drive is.
Yeah, there is a way to relocate your user folder, but that's tricky.
It's tricky, and it's mm-hmm. I wouldn't recommend it if these other things work.
Yeah.
Also uninstall, using Revo Uninstaller, any programs you no longer use.
Okay.
Including programs that may have come with the computer that you never used.
Yeah.
Oh, I have blasted those a long time ago.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
So what? How big is your small drive?
It's 105.
Yeah, that's really tiny. You've got to be.
Yeah.
My
judicious.
Yeah, you've got to be really diligent about keeping it clean. My suggestion would be take it to a reputable dealer and tell them to replace the 100-gig drive with a 250-gig drive. Those are ridiculously cheap nowadays. What they will do is transfer everything over from one to the other and leave you with double the room.
I see. That sounds like a very, very good
even
idea.
A 320 gig
or 320. Well, right. Yeah. Take a look at the prices and see what you're willing to afford.
Yep.
The other thing to do is before you do any of that, make sure all your data are fully backed up.
Mm-hmm. At least twice.
Yeah. Okay. Just in case the first time.
No, seriously.
Yeah.
That's,
I agree with you. Yes. And you mentioned, let me just circle back on one thing, and I'm not Jennifer Psaki saying that, but if I should go in and redirect the data to go to the D drive. I'm sure it's all being saved now on the C drive.
That's a problem. Mm-hmm. So you can copy your documents folder, your music folder, your pictures folder. What else would there be? Downloads.
How about things like OneDrive that show up on that?
Let's deal with these first.
Yeah,
because that's a lot trickier. So if you copy all of those things over to your D drive, then before you delete them from C, it's the order of this is important. Before you delete them from C, go into each of your programs, Microsoft Office, et cetera, and make sure that they are pointed at the documents folder on the D drive.
Yeah, you can change the
settings.
Or the
music folder on the D drive, or the pictures folder on the D drive.
Normally, when you hit save in a program, it defaults to C. You can then manually move it to D every time you save a document.
But if you go
in the neck.
Yeah.
But here's the thing with Windows, though. And Microsoft Office, you have to do it for each program. So if you use Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, each one of those, you've got to go into the settings and look to see where it's the default saving and change it to the D.
Okay. Excellent. I wasn't aware of that. One would think that it would be a universal setting, but correct, we are dealing with Microsoft.
Yes, one would think that. Yeah. It is not. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's all great. It's sound advice. Gentlemen, thank you so very much.
Thank you. Good luck.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Have fun. Yeah.
Remember when 100 gigs was huge?
Yes. Well, remember when all we had were text documents?
Yeah.
I remember the Apple Cider.
Five megabyte hard drive.
Five megabyte hard drive, and it held every business program available for the Apple III, and still left you a couple of meg for your data. I suddenly have Enright syndrome. Those days are long gone. Take a look. Anybody looking to buy a computer, I know that Microsoft's I thought I heard music. I know that Microsoft's...
His headset banged the
microphone.
His
headset banged the mic. I know that Microsoft's minimum requirements for Windows are very low. Microsoft lies about their minimum requirements. They lie so that they can sell cheap computers, so that their partners can sell cheap computers. But the fact is, you at a minimum... Double every single one of their requirements.
Easily.
It is the minimum for Windows.
But that's exactly
right. If you want to put anything else on the computer, it's not enough.
It's not enough. That's exactly right. If all you want to do is boot it up and play Solitaire or Minesweeper, it is right.
Well, even if you can get that far, sometimes the minimum is, it'll boot up and then just stare at the screen.
Yeah, exactly. So
you want to do something on it too?
Yeah, double that.
Good
and
luck.
For anybody looking to buy a computer... particularly if you're building your own or it's being custom built for you by somebody, please make sure that you have a minimum of 250 gig on your boot drive. Having it be an SSD, even 350 gigs is not a lot of money these days comparatively, and you'll be much, much happier. You'll boot it up, 10, 15 seconds. And believe me, you'll be thrilled. And if you have a system that has multiple drives, then absolutely that second drive, the data drive, can be a spinning drive. It doesn't need to be as fast as the boot drive. So it can be cheap spinning drive, but make sure that your data are all going to the D drive, and that requires going into every single application. All right, back to the phones. It's Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Hi, guys. Some time ago, I recall hearing somewhere, probably from you guys, that it can be a good idea to move your photos from iCloud to Google Photos. So when my wife got the message on her iPhone that she was running out of space, I thought, well, this is a good time to do this. And after some monkeying around, finally got the photos copied over to Google Photos. And I thought, well, now we need to delete them from iCloud, right? Well,
no.
From what I can tell, you can't do that without deleting them off the phone, too.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And the reason to switch to Google Photos has changed. It used to be because Google Photos gave you free storage space, and you had to pay for iCloud photo storage. That is no longer the case. Now you have to pay for Google storage space. So if you're already in the Apple world, you may just buy more space on iCloud,
right,
than going through the hassle of moving to Google Photos and then buying more space on Google.
And iCloud gives you 5 gig free. Google Photos gives you 15 gig free. The other thing
is... I have 250 gigs in my photo library.
Yeah, at least that. The other thing to be aware of is that if you are an Amazon Prime customer, you get free photo storage from them.
But not free video storage.
Right.
And videos in your photo library count as videos, then it stops uploading your photo library.
Right.
Because I tried switching to Amazon Photos, and it stopped after the first 5,000 photos because there was a video in the way.
Yep.
And it won't upload the rest of the photos.
Right. Right. So you got to be careful about that. But there are lots of things you can do to get free storage, but really?
And most of them are going away.
Most of them are going away. But really, the easiest thing, I mean, it's not expensive. It's a couple of bucks a month. You know?
Well, what I found with iCloud, 200 gigs, well, the 50 gigs that most people need for doing your backups is 99 cents a month. That's right. Almost negligible. 200 gigs is $2.99 a month. That's not bad. The next step up is 2 terabytes for 10 bucks a month.
Yeah.
That's a little bit more money.
Yeah, that's a little more money.
I wish there was like a 1 terabyte for, you know, 5 bucks a month, because I have 250 gigs of data, so I had to go up to the 2 terabyte plan.
Right, right.
Well, we're in the bottom end of the whole business here. She's only using the minimum on iCloud now, or not quite the minimum.
So you might be better off doing the 99 cents a month to get 50 gigs of cloud space, and then just stick with iCloud. That way she doesn't have to learn anything new about transferring to Google Photos.
Right. Mm.
Okay. Well, I guess that makes that simple. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Yeah, we're finding that everybody's changing their policies. Everything being free was great.
Mm-hmm.
While it lasted, and now it's not. So,
They got to find ways of making money, and that's the whole problem nowadays.
Yeah, places like Google and Apple don't need to make more money. I'm sorry.
And hard drive.
Tell that to their shareholders.
Yeah, hard drive prices.
Unfortunately.
Hard drive prices have dropped so much. It's interesting. So Google's prices are similar. 2 terabytes is 10 bucks a month. 200 gigs is 3 bucks a month. But they have a 100 gig plan for 2 bucks a month.
Right.
So if you have more than 50 gigs but less than 200 gigs, then Google has a slightly cheaper plan.
Right. So, yeah, there's just so many choices, and none of them are free anymore. So.
Yeah.
That's fair, I guess, just the way that works. All right, we're going to take – uh-oh, my machine froze. Look at that. Oh, it's because Google won. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple. Our first hour is done. We are done with an hour, but we got a whole another hour of the longest running computer show coming with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 58 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites. I have no idea how much time is left, so I'm just going to say we'll take a break. Give us a call. We'll be back shortly. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we continue to hurtle headlong into our 33rd year on the air. Yes, yesterday was our 32nd anniversary. We've been on the air for 32 years, and it's due to you people. It's due to you making the calls, and you can continue to do that. It's easy enough. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like our friend Joe did from Cheek.
Milwaukee, New York.
There you go. What's up?
Well, hope to provide a little bit of help to the guy with the phone that doesn't seem to want to update. Because data is usually metered and expensive and stuff like that. Google Play Store itself does have a setting that you can go into. Right. So when you go into settings, you go into network preferences, app download preference. So mine is set to over any network because I'm on tablets, so the only network it really has anyway is Wi-Fi.
Right.
But if it has the radio button on over Wi-Fi only, that's probably why it's not working okay.
Right.
as far as the guy that's nearly out of space continuously, where I work, we allocate about 80 gigabytes to the system drive, believe it or not. But the key is we do that out of convenience. Anytime we install an application, it goes on the D drive. That way we can tell the Windows folks, okay, C drive is your drive. Anything goes wrong with it, you take care of it. If it's the D, we'll take care of it. Anyhow, the big caveat there is not all programs will want to install to the D drive. Some they don't even give you a choice. But a good example is, okay, you get pre-installed programs when you buy your PC, like Microsoft will put a trial version of Office on there, or you might buy it with Office. So
Right. Chances
are they're going to put it on C. So unless you have installation media, you're kind of out of luck there. But you can get by with small C drives. It's just, it can be tough sometimes.
It's very tough, and that's why for the average user, you want a minimum of 250 gig, and more is better. And like we said, the 250, 350 gig SSD drives are not terribly expensive considering anymore. So it's not a bad idea to as we say, I've upped my drive, up yours.
Bada bing, try the veal, he's going to get an 11.
Well, the one thing I've been kind of wondering about is the strength of passwords. So we're always told, okay, 32-character password, 64, the site will accept them, all that. But I'm thinking to myself, does that really matter if you have two-factor authentication enabled? Because the password you use for the second factor is changing all the time. So really, does it matter the strength of the first password?
It's not a bad thing to have strong passwords. It is possible in some devices to bypass the second from the other end, right?
Yeah.
So if somebody breaks into your bank and they can guess your first password, they can bypass the authentication.
And sometimes we've seen, especially if the second factor is a text message, which a lot of places use, that isn't secure because you're text messages can be cloned, and so someone else can get your text messages. If you're using an authenticator app, the Google Authenticator, Apple Authenticator, Microsoft, things like that, that's a lot better. But what we've seen a lot of, I think it was even PayPal was criticized this in the early days, that if you don't have your phone to get that second factor anymore, okay, that's all right. We'll let you in anyway.
Right.
Just say you don't have your phone anymore and they'll let you in anyway.
It's simply not a good idea to relax your standards for passwords.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Oh, geez. I remember back years ago when I was signing up for Twitter.
Yeah.
They were like just introducing second factor authentication. So I set that up. Okay, what's your phone number? Okay, great. Put that in. Oh, now we support, Google Authenticator, Microsoft Authenticator, whatever. Go, okay, great. Then I said, well, SMS is insecure because of SIM jacking and all that.
Right.
It says, okay, I don't want SMS anymore. And that disabled two-factor authentication.
Yeah.
They don't do that anymore, but golly, that was disappointing to see.
Everybody got it wrong in the beginning. That's the simple fact.
And I wish everything, it's almost like I wish there were a law passed that required all financial institutions to implement that because, I'll just say I'm a certain rather famous credit card subscriber and they don't have second factor.
Mm-hmm.
My credit union that I log into, they have this weak second factor of they present you with one of three random questions.
Yeah, all the questions you've been answering for years on Facebook, by the way, in those little quizzes.
Yep. Yeah, my bank sends an email as the second factor.
That's
okay. Then the bad guy has to have two passwords, but they could.
They got them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not to mention they could hijack the email in flight. Well, that'd take a bit, but still.
Yeah.
It takes a bit, but they know how to do it.
Indeed.
Two-factor authentication with an authenticator app is much more secure than anything else these days, but do not be lax on your password strength because habits are hard to form and easy to break.
Indeed. Well, the thing about the credit union I subscribe to, they have random three questions that they ask, but that wreaks havoc with my automatic login from my password manager.
Yeah.
All three of my questions have the same answer.
Yeah.
That's probably not good either, Joe.
If they have an answer that's not related to the question, what was your first car? Green.
Right, exactly.
I'd rather be able to log in automatically because, I'd rather have that managed by a password manager.
Yep.
Right.
I mean, I suppose I could have three separate entries I could select from for the three separate questions, depending on which one I... Well, the thing is, by the time I get to the second question, I don't know what it is.
Right, exactly.
What entry to select. So all three... The geniuses that set that up didn't check to see if all three answers were the same, but oh well.
Yep.
Good for me in what I want to do, but...
Right.
Thank you for your time. I certainly enjoy the show, and like others have said, 32 more years. Hope you can do it.
Yeah. Thank you. Us too. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Apple has you set up three questions, and they randomly ask you two of the three.
Well, that's not much better.
Yeah. if you don't have access to them, so they'll fall back, and a lot of places will do this. Apple has their own authenticator, but if you say you don't have the phone, they'll fall back to text message.
Hold on.
Which, again, we're back to not being secure anymore.
Well, but, what's the better second choice?
The best thing is you have no option if you forget your password.
Yeah.
And there are some systems like that. You forget your password, too bad.
Too bad. Can't get in.
Well, what we're seeing, especially on Facebook, if someone else creates a copycat account of yours or someone does break into your Facebook account, there's almost no way to get it back.
Right.
There's nobody to talk to at Facebook. You have to fill out a fraud form, and then they'll send back another form that you go to, and they'll start showing you random pictures and says, "Is this a friend? Is this a friend? Is this a friend?" And what we've seen the bad guys are doing is they fill up your friends list with other people. So every time you say no, this is not a friend, it's wrong.
Right.
And you can't get back into your account.
Right. Right. So all right.
Especially,
back to-
like I said, especially Facebook password. Make it unique because Facebook leaks data all the time.
All the time. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Pittsford, New York. Hi, Rich. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I recently upgraded my Galaxy S4 to a A42 Samsung phone, and it ran great for a while. I had bought a screen protector and a case right from Verizon when I got it. All of a sudden, I started getting bars across it and like a flashing green screen, and nothing would work. So I took the protector off of it. Everything works fine. Put it back on. A couple of days later, it doesn't work. I called Verizon tech support, eventually got them. They were good, and reset the phone, put the screen protector back on, dies. I buy another one, another totally different type screen protector, works good for a couple of days, dies. So what I'm wondering is, have you ever heard of, or not screen protectors, but the case for the phones?
It was not a screen protector, it was a case, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it was a case, right.
Okay. Yes, I have heard of that. And mostly what causes that is overheating. The phones, not every phone is good at managing heat. And it also depends on what you do with it. Certainly people who spend a lot of time playing video games on their phone, et cetera, have
or
this
watching
problem.
Watching movies.
Watching movies, anything that uses a lot of screen time. YouTube videos, et cetera, et cetera. The system can get hot. And if your case, particularly things like the Otter cases, and there are a number of rubberized cases, they hold heat in very, very well.
It protects the phone.
It does protect the phone perfectly.
Good pocket warmer.
Right. So again, in the summer, you have less chance to cool the phone. If you're holding it out in the air and the air is 90 degrees, you're not gonna cool that phone down much no matter what you do. So we have seen that more and more with both less expensive and more expensive phones when you get one of those cases that holds in the heat.
And sometimes we even see that cases that are too cheaply made can cause other problems too. A lot of people will go online and buy the cheapest case they can get.
Yeah. And the ventilation isn't just there. You know, they might have different slots, you know, that are supposed to be open on the phone for breathing, and you get one of these cheap cases and it covers it up. So the heat's got no place to go except inside the phone.
Right. So yeah, we do see that fairly often, and that's the main cause.
So it wouldn't be a case of asking to get a replacement phone. It's probably going to be the design of the phone isn't going to help me.
Well, it's a combination of the design of the phone and the case you're using.
You might be able to check Samsung's website to see if they have any recommended cases.
Yeah.
They might even sell their own.
I know that some places, and they're not cheap, but some places sell perforated cases with holes in them. And they're not just holes, they're aesthetic.
Yeah.
But they allow more hot air to escape. Yeah.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you very much for your help with this.
Yep. Yep. Good luck.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks. Yeah, it's...
Well, it's just self-preservation. I mean, even computers. Once the fans get clogged up and, you know, they start overheating in that, they shut down. Because, you know, the fans can't circulate the air and the heat gets so built up in there. There is a mechanism in it to protect it. So it shuts it down. Same with the phones.
But if that keeps happening too often, it can damage the hardware if it has to keep doing a thermal shutdown.
Yep. In fact, yeah, because a thermal shutdown is the very last ditch.
Yeah.
Not damage the phone. And I mean, a lot of people put cases on their phones. I've got a case on my phone, and it's fine. But not all phones are capable of doing that easily.
Especially if you use the cheaper ones.
There's cheaper cases that don't have the ventilation and that type of stuff.
And it may not be fit exactly to your phone.
Yeah.
That's one of the problems.
Generic case.
Especially in the Android world, is that there's so many shapes and sizes of phones. We have it hard enough in the Apple world where there's, 20 different phone sizes. In the Android world, there's, 200, 2,000 different phone sizes?
Yeah. 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 Even with just a few, it's like, I have an iPhone.
Okay. Yeah. Which one?
iPhone?
Yeah.
And is it the Pro or the, it gets all nuts. It gets nuts. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Jim. What's up?
I just wonder if you could talk about a little bit about the pros and cons of ad blockers and what might be the best one for Firefox.
Okay. First, let me preface this by saying I'm about to be incredibly hypocritical. Because I have ads on my sites, and I tell people all the time how to block them. So I make no money off my websites because nobody ever sees the ads. Anyway, there are a number of ad blockers that are available. I prefer uBlock Origin. U, which is usually used to be a Mu. uBlock Origin, UBLOCK. Space Origin, O-R-I-G-I-N. So far, that has been the best one I've found. It works on both Chrome and Firefox. I believe there are versions for every browser.
Yep.
So, and it seems to be quite regularly updated. It seems to catch so much stuff, and it works very well. Now, you will find that people get around that. For example, Facebook. Recently, ads look like posts.
Mm-hmm.
And uBlock Origin won't block posts. So when an ad comes through as if it were a post, you will see it. But on any site that actually has ads, uBlock Origins is an amazing job for me.
And a lot of websites have put in anti-blocker blocks, so right. They will recognize you have an ad blocker on and refuse to let you into the site unless you whitelist it. So you can always whitelist the sites you want to support and want to see the ads from, but I find with the research I have to do for troubleshooting, I had to turn my blockers off because there were so many pages I just couldn't get to,
right.
Because I needed to see that information.
Okay. Well, given that statement, I mean, is it wise to put one on or should you just put up with the ads?
Well, it depends on where you go. And I know I don't mean like bad places. I just mean as Steve
annoying
said,
ads.
Some places you cannot go there if you have an ad blocker. So put on an ad blocker, and if you find one of those places, you can either go somewhere else, or if you really need to see that site, uBlock Origin lets you turn it on and off based on each site. When you click on the link, you can turn it off for the specific site that you're on right now.
Okay, one last question. Is that free, or is that the cost?
No, it's free. uBlock Origin is free.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
Yep.
Most of the time we've all gotten used to just ignoring the ads. And so the advertisers know that, and they keep changing the way the ads work. So now the ads will cover up your screen for a minute, then you have to find the X to close the ad to see your screen again. Or it plays in a little window, which is nice, but then that little window follows you as you scroll down the screen.
And you can't close it out.
And you can't close it
out. And I don't really mind that on my desktop, but it makes me crazy on my phone. It makes me crazy on my phone.
YouTube has gotten really bad. They're adding more and more within a video.
Mid-roll ads now. Yeah, you got pre-roll, mid-roll, and post-roll.
Yeah.
And they're keeping most of the money. There's a guy I follow that he has basically stopped putting ads on his YouTube channel because he doesn't make any money and doesn't want YouTube to make any money either, and has gone to full Patreon support.
Well, we were talking about that at Mastermind Lounge the other day. We're getting some YouTubers who are looking for alternate revenue streams,
mm-hmm.
right? So they want to meet with their, do meet and greets and all of that stuff on our platform where they get most of the money, It's a very significant portion of the money. And they're finding that many of them are being demonetized on YouTube. So they're making less and less and less money there. So they're looking for an alternate revenue stream like ours in order to make more money. And yes, on Patreon, you can give them money every month and it's great, but they're finding that people respond better to, you know, send me a couple of bucks and we'll do a meet and greet. A couple of bucks and we'll do a one-hour session.
Discord is another one that's getting very popular.
Yeah.
I mean, a couple of the forums that I belong to as far as the ham, they have Discord. Yeah. And that way you can avoid all those stupid, annoying ads.
That's one of the things that I find most ironic about the Apple Epic lawsuit that Epic is suing because Apple takes 30% of sales. That's low compared to everyone else. And Epic takes 30% on their own store.
Yes.
That's okay.
That's okay.
And, you know, it used to be you want to sell something at a you know, giant orange building that has a lot of stores around town.
Yeah.
They tell you what you're going to sell it for. And because they tell you how much profit they want. So if you have a thing that costs $10, they're going to sell it for $50 and then give you $5. That way they can have a 20% off sale. They're still making money. And they can have a 50% off sale. They're still making money.
That's right.
Average retail markup is 200%.
Yes, it is. Whereas a place like Mastermind Lounge, we think of ourselves as agents.
Yeah.
So we take an agent's type of percentage. And which, that's anywhere between 10 and 20%. Depending on the type of thing.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of how Apple started 20 years ago. The record companies were taking 90%. Yep. And giving the artist 10%. And then the artist had to pay his agent 10% out of that.
Yes.
Apple came along to do, you know, music sales and said, okay, we'll take 30% and we'll give the artist 70%. So suddenly the artists are making a fortune compared to what their record companies were selling them. And it was amazing and people loved it because it was only 30% when it used to be 90%.
I have a friend who is a manager.
Yep.
Of things like Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. I mean, that level, right? He said that for so much time, none of those groups made money from album sales.
Yeah.
They made it all from live appearances. Now they're making it on Mastermind Lounge. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites, right here on the Truly Great. Member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
Everybody chair dance.
And it's going to be this way, so.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm still Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. As we've said, we've been on the air 32 years in one day, hurtling headlong into our 33rd year on the air. And again, that's all due to you folks. The day you stop calling is the day we stop the show. So keep on calling. And you can do that at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. In a surprise Friday announcement, Apple said that it will take more time to improve its controversial child safety tools before it introduces them. Apple said it plans to get more feedback and improve the system, which has three key components: iCloud photo scanning for child sexual abuse material, or CSAM, on-device message scanning to protect kids, and search suggestions designed to protect children. Ever since Apple announced the tools, it has faced a barrage of criticism from concerned individuals and rights groups across the world. The big argument the company seems to have a problem addressing seems to have been the potential for repressive governments to force Apple to monitor for more than CSAM. Edward Snowden, accused of linking U.S. intelligence and now a privacy advocate, warned on Twitter, "Make no mistake, if they can scan for kiddie porn today, they can scan for anything tomorrow." Critics said these tools could be exploited or extended to support censorship of ideas or otherwise threaten free thought. Apple's response that it would not extend the system was seen as a little naive. All it would take to widen the narrow backdoor that Apple is building is an extension of the machine learning parameters to look for additional types of content, said the Electronic Frontier Foundation. It's a move that companies had to take. In mid-August, more than 90 NGOs contacted the company in an open letter begging that it reconsider. That letter was signed by Liberty, Big Brother Watch, ACLU, Center for Democracy and Technology, Center for Free Expression, EFF, ISOC, Privacy International, many more. The organization warned of several weaknesses in the company's proposal, one that very much cut through, that the system itself may be abused by abusive adults. LGBTQ plus youths on family accounts with unsympathetic parents are particularly at risk, they wrote. As a result of this change, iMessages will no longer provide confidentiality and privacy to those users. Apple's defenders said what Apple has been trying to achieve is to maintain overall privacy on user data while creating a system that could pick up only illegal content. They also pointed to the various fail-safes the company built into the system. Those arguments did not work. And Apple execs surely picked up on the same kind of social media feedback we all saw, which represented deep distrust in the proposals. What happens next? Apple's statement didn't say, but they're certainly not giving up. Given that the company has spent weeks since the announcement meeting with media and concerned groups from across all its markets on this matter, it seems logical that the second iteration of its child protection tools may address some of the concerns. We're quite certain that recent polls that showed people were thinking of buying a new iPhone were now thinking about buying an Android specifically because of this issue had nothing to do with Apple's decision. Feeling better about Apple? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And what I keep waiting to see on any of these stories is that Google and Facebook are already doing this.
Not quite the same thing.
And Apple says that their method is more private than Google and Facebook.
I don't doubt that. But the point is, if they cannot guarantee, the problem that Apple has, it is that it has been known to work with China and other companies on various things.
They obey Chinese law when the government tells them to do something.
Right. And that's a problem, because if the Chinese government says, oh, you can scan for this? Well, we need you to scan for these faces. We need you to scan for this, thing.
Mm-hmm.
Apple will do it.
Yep.
And that's a problem.
Yeah, I just found an article. In 2020, Facebook reported over 20 million images matched their CSAM scanning.
Right.
And so you don't want to buy an Apple phone because of it. You can't buy a Google phone because of it. And you can't buy a Facebook phone because of it.
Yeah. Well, you should never buy a Facebook phone to begin with.
They're already stupid for having that type of stuff anyway. But putting it on Facebook? Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's... Yes.
There's no excusing dumb.
Yeah. But yes, people are, everybody is against child pornography, I hope.
Better
certainly
be.
Everybody in this room, but I mean better just everybody, be. Everybody should be against child pornography. But it's not, this issue is not about the child pornography. It's about the other things they can do.
Mm-hmm.
Apple is both known for the quality of their code, which means they can do a lot more than they're doing, and they are known for going along with governments like China's, and that those two things combined are making people very, very leery of Apple doing this scan. And I don't doubt that that they have the best intentions here, and I get that, but they may not be the best company to be the guardians of this sort of thing. So it's a question that is yet to be answered. We'll see what happens. We'll see where it goes. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. What's up, Joe?
Good afternoon, guys. I have a really weird problem, and I know it's not a uncommon problem. I've researched the internet, and I can't solve it. My iPhone 5 and my wife's 7 iPhone can no longer upload photos, JPEG photos, to the Windows 10 systems, both our laptop and our PC. I've uninstalled the photo app. I've tried everything that they recommend online, and it doesn't work. However, my camera, which uploads the same JPEG images, works. I have nowhere to turn to try to fix this problem.
What program are you using on Windows to read the photos from the phone?
It's the Photos app.
Just the regular Windows Photos app, okay.
Yeah, what, it supplies. You can look at the images once, and then when you try to save an image, they all go to the iconic view of the photos, and you can no longer process them. And it says you either have a format corruption or some other obscure identification.
Yeah, there's a newer image format called HEIF, High Efficiency Image Format, that is a different compression than JPEG, and Apple's iPhones use that for the last few years, and it's starting to become more and more common. You can get a HEIF reader for Windows. They're available in the Windows Store. Or you can set your phone to save just JPEGs and not HEIF, but it doesn't call it that.
Yeah, my iPhone 5 doesn't have some of the latest conditions that you can apply to the photos, so I'm lost. My wife 7 seems to have them. They don't work either. So what was the application that you said I could get?
In the Windows Store, and I'll post it in a minute, there is a program from Microsoft, HEIF Image Extensions, and that allows Windows 10 to read the HEIF compressed files. And I'm trying to find on the phone where the setting is. In Settings under Camera... where is it? Formats? There it is. Yeah, setting. Oh, geez. I'll try to find a link for that. Settings, camera formats. You have the option for high efficiency, which does the HEIF format, or most compatible, which does JPEG format. So high efficiency makes the photos smaller, but you need to have a newer reader on your computer.
Ah, that's the breakdown.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I will give it a try. The mystery is I have an Olympus camera that's quite old with a memory card, and I load those JPEGs up, and they work fine.
Because they're not HEIF.
Because they're JPEG. Yeah,
yeah, they're it's two different formats.
Okay, I got it. I will go out and try that avenue. I really appreciate your look pointing me in the right direction.
Thanks, Joe. Have fun.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
And there's a companion video processor called HEIV, H-E-I-V, High Efficiency Image for Video.
Right.
That does the same thing. It makes the file smaller so that you can fit more of them in the same format. So I got the Windows app loaded for Windows 10, and I just found the link for setting your phone to use straight JPEGs versus the HEIF.
Oh, yeah, there's HEIF stuff in Linux as well. Very nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's part of the H.265 audio and video compression formats that came out a few years ago.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Bob?
Hello, greetings. This Apple spying nonsense, this is nothing new. Think back a couple of decades. How many times have there been suggestions that the Internet be controlled, and the excuse is always, we got to protect the children.
Right.
They trot the same excuse out every stinking time. how do they expect anybody to believe them?
Because they know that most people don't remember things. Tom, it's that simple.
Yeah, it's yesterday's news.
Yeah.
And they don't want to get sued if someone does have find child porn on a phone.
Right.
How is it Apple's fault legally? How would it be Apple's fault if I downloaded garbage onto my phone?
Because this is America. Anybody can sue anybody for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not they win depends on how good your lawyer is.
Well,
it's that simple.
Not right here.
And they're just, I get there that it's a twofold issue. On the one hand, yes, they are against child pornography. 100% yes. For that. Happy about that. But the other thing is they are covering their own butts. And mm-hmm. That's just, that's corporate business.
That's life.
For every, just go back 20 years or so in your mind, every couple of years, somebody's got a new idea to lock the internet down or something like that, and it's always to protect the kids.
People fear what they right. cannot control.
Yeah,
it's that simple.
And that's the usual fear is whenever one of these new laws come, you know, proposed laws comes out, it's either the vague wording of it that people fear other stuff is going to happen, or, you know, I hate to use the word slippery slope, but if we ban this, then that makes it easier to ban the next thing.
Yeah, and the bigger thing, though, is, you know, we can sit there and say, well, we don't want this on the internet. Hello, it's called the World Wide yeah. Web.
That's the other thing.
We do not have control over everything and anything that's on there.
And we've already started seeing.
We can protest against yeah. it all we want until the cows come home and say that it's wrong. Yeah. But
we've already started seeing fracturing of the World Wide Web. You know, the internet in China and Russia is pretty different. In fact, a lot of the Middle East is pretty different than what we see here because of all the censorship those governments are already doing.
Right. All right. Thanks, Bob.
Have a good day.
Yep, have fun.
Matter of fact, I just heard an interesting one that kids in China, they can be limited to an hour on, if they're playing games in that, an hour on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Nothing during the week.
You can do that here as well with apps on the phone.
But I remember reading a story about that. This is a law in China.
Yeah, this is a law.
You can do it individually. There they do it by law.
Yeah, the iOS has a thing called Screen Time, right. Where you can get a report on how much what programs you used, you know, how you used your screen time, and it's on by default, and you go in and look at it every now and then. I used Facebook this many hours this week.
Yeah,
it's something you don't want to see.
Yeah, that's you really don't want to go look at that.
Yeah, but you can enforce it on your child's device.
Right, right, and we've kind of lost the knack of. Not looking at our phones. You go out with a group of people and there's always somebody who's on their phone.
Oh, here it is. Yeah, between 8 p.m. and 9 p.m., Fridays, weekends, and public holidays, starting September 1st, is only when children are allowed to game on right. their devices, 3 hours a week.
Yeah.
Well, no. So, because most of the kids are in school all the rest of the time studying, and that's why a lot of... Chinese and Japanese, the schools last for so long. I just heard a podcast from on MacBreak where a guy, he lives in Hawaii now, but he went to school in Japan. And the school weeks in Japan are half days on Saturdays. And their first week of school there, he said that the teacher said, we'll see you Monday. And so I thought there was school tomorrow. And the teacher said, well, yeah, your embassy says you can't go to school on Saturday. Because you're an American, and Americans don't go to school on Saturday.
Oh, that's
but
nuts.
No, I'm coming to school tomorrow.
Yeah,
and he actually had to fight with the embassy regulators to let him go to school because he didn't want to fall behind the rest of the class.
That's right. I understand that. I absolutely get it.
And they
now,
go.
And we see that here in America. We have a lot of school districts that block things like Facebook, et cetera, during class, and that. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You want students concentrating on their work. I've had students in college fail my classes because they've spent all their time in class on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
or playing games. I've seen them do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to stop them. It's their money. If they want to spend that kind of money playing games in class and flunking.
Their parents' money, and they have to explain it to them.
Well, exactly. It's their business.
Yeah.
And I've had students complain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, why did you give me an F? Well, because you failed. Oh, I turned in all the work. No, you really didn't. And you failed these three tests. And the reason you did is because you were on Facebook every single class instead of listening. But I read all the assignments. Yeah, but I don't give all the information in the assignments. I give a lot of the information in class.
And you didn't comprehend what you read, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. Really.
So, yeah. And again, once you hit the college level, the theory is you're an adult. If you want to pay to fail, you can pay to fail. But high school kids, grammar school kids, I completely accept that they, you know, preventing them from doing something like Facebook.
Yeah, and a lot
during
of
class. Yeah. Is acceptable.
Well, even most all the Chromebooks and that these kids are given, they're blocked from doing that at school. I mean, they cannot get on Facebook and that while they're at school and supposed to be learning. It's blocked. And, you know, you go home and use your own computer. You don't use the school one.
Right. Right.
And that's the way it should be. Well, that's kind of stupid. Well, you know, you sit there and say, well, did you pay for that laptop?
You're right.
Is it yours? Do you get
the problem that we have is that they are called personal computers.
Yeah.
When often they are actually the company's computers.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's broken and you need to be without it for a couple, I can't be without it for a day.
Then you shouldn't have broken it.
Then you shouldn't have broken it because it's a personal computer. It's so personal to me.
Right. Right. Look. We all spend way too much time on our computers. Lord knows I'm right there. I'm first to raise my hand. But
behind you.
The reality is that at some point we do have to take a certain amount of personal responsibility for our actions. We all we tend to forget the responsibility part. And kids can't take responsibility. They are too young. And I get that. Absolutely get that. But adults should take responsibility for their own actions.
But again, you know, blocking it, it's for their own good. Because, you know, I mean, you're there to learn, not sit there and play games and, you know, connect with this person or that person because, you know, oh, you got to tell them this or that. It can wait until after school. You know, and just like the kids have to have, a lot of schools are now making kids hand their phones in a classroom up front, and you can pick it up on your way out. You're not being denied your phone. That way, if mom or dad have to get a hold of you, it'll go off, and the teacher can look at it. But I'm seeing more and more schools are demanding that, all right, put your cell phone there, and don't let one go off in class.
Well, I tell students, you know what, first, turn off your ringers. I don't want to hear ringers during class. During an exam, if you so much as look at your phone, you have flunked.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you're doing on that phone, and you're taking a test.
Yeah.
And I had a student come to me one time and said, my kid is sick. I might get a call. What do I do? I said, give me the phone. I will keep the phone on my desk. If it rings, you sit right in front. I'll hand it to you. If I see that it's, you know, she said it's going to be my husband or my babysitter. Here are their names. If one of them comes up, I will
hand
you the phone.
Yeah, that's cool.
If it's a pizza parlor, I'm not giving you the phone.
Unless you've ordered enough for everybody.
Yeah, I was going to say, unless she's paying for pizza for the whole class.
That's exactly right.
Go for it.
And, in fact, it did. And, hey, I'm a dad, right? Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, look, you and I will arrange. I'll give you a separate test separately. Yeah. She said, I got to go home. My kid's throwing up. I got to go home.
It's an emergency.
Go. Family first. Comes first.
Yep.
Always.
Yep.
But for everybody else, no. You can't, you have certain responsibilities, and you took them on when you signed up for my class,
mm-hmm.
and I will hold you to those responsibilities.
Well, that's
and
if your you problem. Don't want,
that's my problem. Oh, that's their problem.
Yeah.
Well, that's why
if you don't want to meet those responsibilities, get out of the class. That's the only choice you have. So I'm not going to let you out of those responsibilities. I don't care.
But like I've said before, you know, it's sad that you can go walking around or just driving around and see so many places. You know, you see people around, and what? They got their phone out and they're face down, face into the screen. You can go to restaurants. Everybody, you know,
yeah.
Like I've said before, see families. They're all into their phones texting instead of, oh, hey, it's family time. Talk.
Yep.
Yeah, I talk to them enough at home.
Yep. That's a whole trouble. They don't.
Yeah. Even my daughter still comes over for Sunday breakfast most Sundays. And when we all get together for an evening meal or whatever, phones are not, unless there's a reason. Okay. So last weekend, for example, she helped a friend move and she said, my friend's not sure when she's going to be ready.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the phone is out and you're waiting for that call. Yeah. I absolutely
get
that.
That's an exception to the
rule. I absolutely get that. Other than that, no thank you. You do not have your phone out.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's called family time, and that's the whole trouble. Too much of that is going by the wayside. That everybody's buried into their phones playing this game or that game or watching this movie or that TV program or chatting back and forth. And, you know, we've just lost contact with families.
Yep. Yep. And when I was a kid, you know, you get kicked out of the house after breakfast.
Yeah, until dark.
When the street lights come on,
yep,
you come
then,
home.
And then it was always, you know, my mom would yell, come on home. 10 more minutes. No, get home now.
It was almost like at lunch. You just had lunch with whatever house you were at.
That's exactly yep. right.
After breakfast, mom kicks you out of the house and be home before dinner because your dad
right.
got home.
If we were at Louie's or yep. we were at Tom's or we were, you know, wherever we yep. were, that's where we had lunch. We were at my house.
Everyone on the street had a different bell or ringer or something that, yeah. you know, so you hear this cowbell. All right, Billy, you got to go home.
And then, of course, how stupid are kids? You know, I'd be out with my friend Lou. 10 more minutes, mom. Lou's mother said it was all right. Like, Lou's mom and my mom don't ever talk.
Yeah.
Okay, 10 more minutes. Lou would say, Nick's mom said 10 more minutes.
Yeah,
okay. Well, see, that was when you were out with your parents, and they said, all right, it's time to go, and they hadn't even got their coats on yet.
Right.
You know you had at least half an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because exactly. they sit there and talk. And,
Wait till dad gets his, no, actually, no, mom, because dad got his coat on first.
Yeah.
And then he'd be sitting there waiting.
Yeah, dad's waiting, and we're just all waiting for mom.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. But those are, you know, we miss some of those things. Get out of the house, don't come back to the, of course, you can't let your kids.
Yeah.
Just nowadays, well, it's a whole different time now.
Yeah. We used to do that. We used to leave the house in the morning. Nobody even cared where we were until, you know, streetlights.
My brother and his wife moved to North Carolina after they got married. And so our first couple times down there, they said there was such a different culture in the South. Everything was slow.
Yeah.
So they were visiting friend once and, you know, getting, you know, late. And so they started getting up to get their coats on and the friends started to say, oh no, come stay. So they took their coats off and sat back down. That means, come back again when you can stay more. It doesn't mean stay now.
Right. Right.
Come stay. So.
You're supposed to say, no, we'd love to, but we can't.
Yeah.
Right. All right, that's it. Our first show of our 33rd year is in the books. Well, dang, you're almost. We've got 43 seconds left. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Again, I want to thank each and every one of you for the past 32 years has made this the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported. And as one of our callers said, keep supporting us, keep supporting this station, and we'll stay. We can do that. That's a deal. We've now made it. It's on you. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?